Devotion. Now let's just basically it takes up the areas which we would refer to as the Adam Lachavero, between man and man. And in general, the sense that you get is that the Torah holds a person to a very high standard with regard to relationships between men, more so than the average society, more so than our society. For example, in our society, there's something that you can't kill people, you can't rape, and things of that sort, obviously, steal, you know. But beyond that, for example, gossip is not prohibited by law. Slander is different, it has to be of a certain kind. You've got to prove damages. It's only approached from the standpoint of damages. But to merely engage to talk about someone and make fun out of someone and have a good time at somebody else's expense is not a violation of the law, as long as the other person can't prove they were actually harmed in some tangible way by it. The activity per se is not prohibited. It's not that we're saying that you owe this to your friend and not to do it. But of course the Torah has a very, very high standard. Let's, for example, go to Tez Zayin, that's 660. 16. Lo sevach rachol b'yamecha. You're not allowed to be a talebearer. Lo samod al dam reyecha. Ani Hashem. These are two laws, which, as I said, you will not find it in the ordinary laws of most societies. I mean, the first one is that you're not allowed to be a talebearer. Now here again, I'm making it clear. It's lashon, what we call lashon, tales, stories. You know, you hear something by one, now you go tell the other person. You know, you go tell the other person. Oh, you hear what so and so is doing, and so forth. The type of things that ensure that there'll be a lot of hostility going on. Losam al damayecha, you may not stand by the blood of your brother. That means that if somebody else is in trouble, in danger, and you are passing by, or whatever, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean passing by, you're aware of it, you're not allowed to ignore it, you have an obligation to help. If someone is drowning, you have to jump in, assuming, of course, that you know how to swim. Anything along those lines, if someone's in trouble, at least call the police, or whatever you can do. Unless, of course, there's nothing you can do. You're on a subway and someone's getting robbed at gunpoint, there's just nothing you can do, so that's something else. But if you fail to do so, if you're in a situation where you could help and you don't, so you're violating a low sase. Now that's not the law of the land. There has been talk about a passage of a good Samaritan. See, but already the society looks at it, that would be like a good Samaritan. The Torah doesn't look at it as a good Samaritan. The Torah looks at it as an obligation. When the Torah uses the term reyecha, your friend, it means a mitzvah. The Torah speaks about it in one way. That's the Torah Shabbat, but you don't know what it means until you go to the Torah Shabbat path. Everything must be elucidated. Of course, if not, then you can say friend is my personal friend. Not every Jew is my friend, in that sense. But the Torah says every Jew is your friend. That's going to be part of the topic for tonight. In a certain sense, every Jew is your friend. In our situation in America, we have to be cognizant of certain other factors. And that is that even if technically speaking you don't owe the same, you do not owe the same obligation, consideration, etc., to a Gentile as you do to a fellow Jew. I mean, it's a good reason, it makes a lot of sense. Nevertheless, in America you must be concerned about certain perceptions. And that is that if you are in a situation and another individual is in trouble and you can help, and everybody knows that you're Jewish, and you ignored it, so then you could be creating a Chilul Hashem. Or, aside from that, you could be creating animosity. Because then people will say, well, that's not the way when another Jew is in trouble, all Jews rush in to help. Now, for example, in Baruch Park, if a Jew is in trouble and there's other Jews around, they're going to rush in to help. And let's assume that there's a bunch of Jews around and it's a Gentile that's in trouble. And the Jews, you ignore it, they don't care, it's not one of their own. That would be a great Chilul Hashem. In addition, it would be dangerous because then people would say that you see, the Jews, they only care about themselves. They're not loyal Americans. I mean, if you don't help anybody, so then that's one level of person. The people will criticize that. Someone that just stands by and doesn't want to get involved. So, all right, but if that's the way you are, that's one criticism. But you help your fellow Jews, and then that's not the way you are. You obviously are someone who does feel it's important to be concerned about other people. Yet, when it comes to a Gentile, you know, so then you discriminate. So that would be the wrong thing to do. You see? However, that's a different consideration. From the consideration of the mitzvah itself, if you ask, if I didn't get involved, was I in violation of this particular mitzvah, then the answer would be no, because there it says, yeah. Okay, the standard that the Torah holds you to in a legalistic sense is one thing. However, in terms of perfection and behavior and considering all the other factors, that's the other consideration. It doesn't mean that they have been incorporated into the mitzvah. Then the Torah says, here taking up tonight, are certain commandments of the Torah that seem to be beyond the level of human nature. The Torah ever demand the impossible? It would seem not. There's a pasuk, lo b'shamayim, it's not in heaven, you know, and so forth. And in general, our concept is, it's from Moshe, you know, Moshe tells us in the Devarim that it's close, to ficha karav elecha, adam mi'o. The Torah is very close to you. Meaning to say, it lies within your nature. Okay? Now, let's read on. Lo sisna asachicha b'levecha. You may not hate your brother in your heart. Now, let me just translate the code. Who is your brother over here? Because, again, brother is fellow Jew. And it doesn't have to be a male. Brother over here means man and woman. See how they have to translate? Doesn't necessarily mean a male. This means that every Jew is prohibited from hating any fellow Jew, male or female, in their heart. Okay? This seems to be a very high standard. It just seems contrary to human nature. A high level person, of course, will not be in this situation too frequently, but to say that to go through an entire existence, human life as we know it, and not to ever hate somebody, seems to be a bit much. However, you shall rebuke your a friend, and you will not bear any sin because of him. On a simplistic level, it means that when somebody wrongs you, the assumption being that you don't just hate a person for no reason, that there's got to be a reason. So usually the person wronged you, or at least you perceive it that way. So therefore, what the Torah is saying is, instead of doing what many people do, they just repress it and bear a grudge because they can't face up to it, or they may even pretend they're too proud to even admit that they feel bad. You see, like many people say, I feel bad. He could never make me feel bad. But the truth is, maybe you do feel bad. So the Torah says that you have to rebuke the person. That is to say that if somebody does something and you're really upset and you can't get over it. Sometimes you can get over it. You think it through and you realize, you didn't really mean it, or whatever the bad day. You can for you. You're not obligated to rebuke the person. If you can get over it and truly forgive him, then the only obligation is because of the hatred. You've got to be very honest. These are some of those things that really depend upon the honesty level of the person. Because a lot of people are very dishonest in the area. Because they're just ashamed to admit sometimes that they really are hurt. It's like a blow to the ego. It's like giving the other person a certain treatment. But in point of fact, they may be in violation of hatred. So the Torah says that you, if the person did something and it really bothers you, and you really feeling there's anger towards the person, so then you have an obligation, by the way. If not, you're going to suffer the consequence. Then you're in violation of the Torah. You can't just stay in that state. You must either get over it, or if you can't, then you have to confront the person. And then whatever your grievance is, you have to do it intelligently. Sit the person down and say, there's something bothering me, I have to get it out. And then, if the person apologizes, whatever the case is, then you're obligated to forgive them, and then you don't have a hatred anymore. That's the ideal situation. Realize that these are not, in most people's way of thinking, these are not issues of religion or halacha. That's how I choose to live my life. But it's not. Inadvertently, you can be in violation, interestingly enough, of a law simply because of what somebody else did. Because that person, I was having a great day, a poor person came along and made that remark, which they shouldn't have made. So they, I didn't do anything, they did something. Yeah, but nevertheless, they evoked the hatred. But now I'm in a halakhic dilemma because of what they did. It's an amazing kind of a system. You may not take revenge, nor may you bear a grudge against, again, the same thing, the members of your nation, fellow Jews. And you shall love your friend as yourself. Again, all of these commandments are extremely challenging, because they seem to be very contrary to human nature, not to take revenge. And by the way, not taking revenge, it's not like, we're not talking about going into a vendetta and wiping out families, like in the mafia. That's not what we're talking about. That's murder. Now, not taking revenge can be a very simple thing. It's, for example, if you know, you needed some help, a favor, you wanted to borrow something, and the other person just didn't want to lend it out, didn't help you. And then they come asking you a couple days later for a similar thing. Can I borrow, you know, your vacuum cleaner? And then you say, you know, well, no, because you didn't lend me. I, you know, and that's not unreasonable, I think. If you needed to borrow something, if you needed a car, whatever. Somebody came in, and the person wouldn't do you the favor, and a few days later, just the identical thing. And you say, look, you know, like I wouldn't mind doing it, but you didn't do it for me. I don't feel like I should do it for you. That's considered to be revenge. That's revenge. And that is a prohibition. If a person does that, then they are in violation of a Yisr D'oraita. It's not just something which, well, you know, childish. It's not like most of us, childish, get above that. Why do you have to do it? But most people would say, but if I choose to do it, it's my right to do it. But the Torah is saying, you don't have the right to do it. It's not what I do. People low sitar, you should not bear a grudge. This gets even more interesting. Because what does it mean to bear a grudge? Let's assume the same thing. Somebody wants to borrow tape recorder, whatever the case is. And same thing, you ask them, and they refuse. Now, here's the second scenario. Come back a few days later, they ask you if they can borrow it. And you say, yeah, you can take it. I'm not like you. Yeah, I'm not going to be like you. Sure, you know. That, you would think, is, well, what's wrong with that? That's the way you're supposed to be. So that is violation of bearing a grudge. If you do that, you're not over lo sikom. You didn't take revenge. You did not take revenge because you let him borrow it. But you're over on bearing a grudge. Okay. Now, why that's the case, just for a few words, requires explanation. So far I can go along with it. It's a high standard not to take revenge, but the Torah looks, control yourself. You don't act out your emotions. I mean, everything we've been learning all these weeks is basically going against your emotions. Not to act out your emotions. That's kedusha. And revenge, I can see that. That's hostility. It means verbal hostility. The Torah is very, very on to us. I mean, the Torah knows what we're about. Okay, it's even sometimes even a person enjoys that even more. Yeah, I'll give it to you. I'm better than you. Okay? So you're really not better than the person. In a sense, you are taking revenge, but you're doing it in a way in which you can cover. So it's win-win. You see, I get the person. I'm able to put the person down, and also I'm in my own mind, I'm excited. You see? So in many people would prefer that. Sure, take it. I have no problem letting out my thing. You know, that's prohibited. But, so I can understand that. But the Torah demands that we're able to control. I'm out. You know, that would be a good thing. That's something we should work on. Yeah, I'll have to come over. And you shall love thy neighbor as thyself. Okay? That, I think, is in a different category, right? Different than everything else we've studied. Because here, I truly would, I'm not the first person to notice and ask the question that people ask it from a critical point of view, to criticize the Torah, to say that the Torah cannot be the ultimate system because it's saying something which is contrary, it's impossible. How is it possible? Say, given human nature, I would agree with the question, given human nature, and that is to say that people are selfish by nature. However, they're also capable of, you know, loving other people. It's not to say that a man does not have the capacity to love other people, but once you understand that, you realize how limited it is. And certainly you can't force love. So even amongst people that are sort of decent, and are good, even there, everybody knows, you can't, it's not, love is not something that can be forced. Here it's saying that you shall love any fellow, anyone who's a fellow Jew. Anybody. Good person, bad person. I mean, we're not talking about categories where the person's a wicked person, and they're outside that. We mean, you know, within reason. Even if the person is not a nice person, not a friendly person, total stranger. You can go from one end to the other end of the world and meet a Jew, same obligation. You're supposed to love this person. Given the fact that people are basically very limited in terms of love, very restricted. And that's because it's all, you know, the reason for that, it has to do with human selfishness. Okay? It's because we're all selfish. There's one area of love that we have, there's absolutely no limits. Self-love. That's when everybody is madly in love. There's one person everyone is madly in love with. But given but there's nothing to be embarrassed about saying that. It's not your fault. That's the way you were constructed. That's how God made a person. And it's very, if you didn't have that factor, nothing would ever get done. Why would a person ever do anything? Not much. You wouldn't do anything. If there was no ego, everybody bashes ego, bash. But you have to do it with ego, because if people stopped having any kind of ego, then the whole world, what makes airplanes fly? I mean, there's drive. I mean, all the technology we enjoy, when people sat back, we're being philosophical, that there's no reason to advance myself in life. So then, the world would be, there wouldn't be a world. Okay? But I'm saying, but given that that's the case, I have no problem with that. But then how can you say that you're obligated to love everybody else? It would be bad enough, or difficult enough, difficult enough if it just said that you shall love everyone. That itself would be almost impossible. But kamocha, like yourself? Why do you have to add that extra jab? What do you mean like yourself? Now you're really making it impossible. Because how many people in the world that you meet, can it be said that you're going to, not only you'll love them, all right, one thing, but like yourself, there I think it's almost impossible. So basically, as we study it, I mean, you're all familiar, you've all learned, Zekhar Gadol Batorah. And Rabbi Akiva said, isn't that which is distasteful to you, do not do to yourself. Oh, okay, that's, all right, fine. That's something else. But that's basically what it means. I'll go through the halachos briefly and explain some of the halachos, because it's very interesting. But in effect, when it becomes filtered down and translated, this is the way the Torah expressed it, but what does it mean, lamais, in terms of our action? Basically, this is the way most people express it. Most people say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Okay? That's not the accurate translation, because it really is that which is distasteful to you. It's not even saying, although we'll see if there's any truth in the statement, do unto others. There is truth in that too. But the statement they're getting it from is real. There's two sides, apparently, to the coin. One side of the coin is that which is distasteful to you, do not do to somebody else. That's not identical to saying do unto others. That's closely related, but it's not identical. But I think that both are true, as we'll see from the source of that. As you know, the principle of the Yahavta Rerecha Kamocha is difficult, as we said, but there's a certain controversy also from a different angle. And that is that it's considered to be called Gadol Batorah. You heard that expression. It's a klal. I mean, it's a fundamental. It's a universal. Now, that only makes it even more difficult, because now, before we just didn't understand it. Alright. But not only are we being commanded in something which seems to be beyond our ability, so you say, okay, so that's for the special. But now, one second, this is a fundamental. If it's a fundamental, then it's got to be something that we can relate to. But why is it such a fundamental? Why is there such a fundamental? That I can, why do I have to love my neighbor as myself? And the Torah has given us many rules prohibiting, I can't take revenge, I can't steal, so if I can manage to avoid violating them, so let's say I can't love my neighbor as myself, so why? But that's a fundamental. So why is it a fundamental? This is illustrated in the story in the Gemara. Story of Hillel and Shammai, in Shabbos, about the convert. Yeah, so to illustrate different approaches in Hillel and Shammai. Everybody always looks at it like Shammai was a tough guy and Hillel was a soft guy. It's not the truth. But anyway, one story was where this Gentile came to Shammai and said he would convert to Judaism if he could tell him the entire Torah while he was staying in the Shammai threw him out. It seems like a ridiculous request. So he just threw him out. That's it. He wouldn't deal with him. Then he went to Hillel. And he said the same thing. He converted, he could teach him the entire Torah while he was standing on one foot. The Hillel said, yeah. The Aflur Ev is an offer. That's the whole Torah. Now go and study. The rest is Perush. I don't know the exact words over here, but that's the sense. Now go and study there. The rest is essentially just Perush. I mean, he said that's the whole Torah. That's even more than Klausite. To the extent that if you accept that, you see that's Judaism. You could be converted. My question then is, Hillel seems to be saying that this is the essence of the Torah. Now, of course, you can say that he was saying it to this person. As I said, given the average, that's very appealing to a person. And you can say that he was gearing his message to the psychology of the person he was talking to. However, I don't believe that is true, but I don't believe that he would say something which was false, just make something up. You know how to do that. I don't think you're allowed to do that. I think people sometimes, in the cure movement, they sort of cross the boundary lines and trying to persuade somebody to become strong, that if you do it, then all these things, well, you know, like it. Sometimes it gets too blatant to sort of like either frighten people or to promise them rewards that'll come to them, which, you know, how do you know? I mean, you can't, that's not the way to go. You should try and convince people because of the Torah. The Torah is true, it's the best way of life and so forth. So therefore, I would say that there must be some type of a truth over here, and that's what I'm really aiming for. The Rambam speaks about this in two places. One is in Hilchos Deos, in the Perek Vav, Halacha Dalet. That's 6:4. And excuse me, 6:3. 6:4 he speaks about the love of the ger, of the convert. He says it is a mitzvah on all people to love, leho, he uses the word love. Each and every individual of Israel, to gufo like his own self. So he doesn't, when he, this is the law, he doesn't just, you know, think that this is the way the Torah is expressing it, but he actually codifies it that way. As it says, and you shall love your friend like yourself. Therefore, you have to lasaper bishvacho, therefore you're obligated to speak his praises, speak positively about the person, and to be concerned about his money. Okay, that's the second one. Just like you are concerned about your own money, and just like you're concerned about your own dignity and respect and honor, you have to respect the person and honor him and treat him in the exact same way that you would like to be treated. Then he adds, parenthetically, and one who is miskaved b'kalon chavero, is another person who derives honor at the expense, like this. In other words, he promotes himself at the other person's disgrace, which happens very often when a person makes fun out of another person, you know, in a social situation. You know, like there's an opportunity, he says something, and you come in with the put down, and like everyone laughs, you become the hero, and that is a case where you are promoting yourself at the other person's embarrassment. That, he says, is very serious, and he says that person does not have a share in the world to come. Okay? He just explained. What does it mean, however, that you have to speak the praises of your friend? Well, what does that mean? In what situation? I just have to go around saying nice things all the time, and that's not sincere. What does that mean? I mean, I have to be concerned about his money. In what sense? I mean, what am I supposed to do? Tzedakah? That's it. I have pushed tzedakah. If he wants a loan, that's not what we're talking about. That's a separate question. The mitzvah is you have to loan a person if you have the money and he needs it. Just like you have to get tzedakah. So that's not what we're talking about. To speak about the praises of your friend, for example, if a certain situation arises and, you know, you happen to be in a place where someone is making an inquiry about so-and-so, or you know that they're interested in so-and-so for a certain position. Okay? And they're inquiring, you know, and you don't like the person. Because if you like the person, two things, let's assume two things. First of all, this person is very qualified. And is asking a specific question. Is this person good at such, you know, whatever. And you know the answer is this person is very competent, has the quality. Alright? And this person obviously is not around. In the room. And also, let's assume that there's nobody else in the room that can answer. So therefore, it would be very important for that person, if somebody would get up, who knows, and would speak the praises of the person. Now, you know the truth, you have the answer, but you really don't like the person. And you don't want to do it. Okay? So that's when, you see, the reason why I'm saying this, they're on the, good. If you like the person, of course you're going to speak their praises. It's a natural thing. So then, that's not the, what's the obligation? That's natural human nature. Right? If your friend needs a job and you're the reference, okay? So, assuming that it's true now, and that's what the lie. Assuming it's true, of course you're going to say positive things about your friend. So what's the Ram talking about? The Ram said that no, that you have to act because of the Acharecha Kamocha, because, well, for whatever reason you're not inclined to do so. You have to do so, because just like you would want somebody else in that situation to speak up for you, so too you have to speak up for your friend, which again means you cannot follow your emotion. I'm saying whatever, you may be neutral, you may not be interested, it's irrelevant. The Acharecha Kamocha, you must speak the praises. Just like you would want somebody to speak your praises. Where? In a situation that warranted it. I mean, that's obviously what the Rambam is talking about. Okay? Now, what is the second thing? And you must be concerned about his money. Again, it's the same principle. That which is distasteful to you, do not do to him. Which means that, you're not allowed to destroy property. That's a separate issue. That's an issue by itself. It doesn't have to be incorporated. What are we talking about? It must be an area which is sort of the gray area. That is to say, that you may treat your object very in a certain way, very carefully, because you're concerned with your record, whatever, each person has something, whatever it may be, your record collection, or your car when you drive, you may be careful, whatever it is, you treat your object in a certain way. Because they're your object, it's important. Now, I'll take the example of a car, because I think that's something we can all relate to. But you may be very careful with your own car, because you don't want the brakes worn out and this and that, so you try not to jam on the brakes and you can't. Now, have you ever noticed that when you're driving somebody else's car, suddenly you're not that careful, you're not that concerned? Well, you may not be. You may be, some people are more concerned because they're afraid of, But, yeah, but if it's not a brand new car, obviously, if it's a brand new car, then you, let's be honest over here. There's a certain emotion you're afraid if there's any little scratch, the person, so that's different, that's sort of an emotion. But if it's not a brand new car, and you're not concerned about a little scratch here and there, then you may feel relaxed. In other words, that same degree of concern which you show to your own because it's yours may not manifest itself. Well, listen, if I need to show you a case to convince you, I will do so. You all go to hotels, and you all have your own apartments, and you all pay for your own electric bill, but when you go to a hotel, do you make sure to shut off every light and electric? I assume that's... Is it the same standard implied, or no, what do we care now? Now it's okay, now we can have fun. Why do these 10 lights? Why do you care? You're not paying for it. So when we come in, you see a totally different standard. Let's assume that to make the case fit, it's Re'acha, it's your friend. Okay, so no loopholes here. You'll say, well, it's a Gentile issue, we're in there. Let's assume it's a kosher hotel, so it's all Jews, everything's owned by Jews. Or let's assume the car is being rented from a Jew. Of course you have a right to drive it, okay? You have a right to drive it, but you didn't, that's another issue. How you treat it is something else. And if you're renting it for a month, and you're flooring it, the gas pedal, and you don't care how you jam the brakes and everything, so that's causing, it's unnecessary damage to the person. But it's not, technically speaking, there's no theft involved, because you paid for it. Yeah, but what about treating your friend as yourself? That's something that people are not thoughtful about. So you see, there is a different standard. You wouldn't want, I would ask one simple thing. The only person that acts a little bit differently is someone who himself owns, if he owns a hotel, and he goes to a hotel, he probably would act because he knows, he identifies. See, put yourself in the other person's position. If this was yours, well, that's what the Torah is saying. Just don't, that which is distasteful to you, don't do to somebody else. The only thing is we may not be aware of all the possible situations. So that's why it's always good to think. The truth of the matter is, I'll tell you, according to halacha, that you're really not allowed to do, when you go to a hotel, even if it's a ghost, alright, to just leave, like, when you're going out, leave all the lights on, because you don't care, you're not paying for anybody, included. That's called baltashka. Just waste of money. It's like you're just destroying property. How do I do that? There's a lot of perfection sometimes in small things. And to me, that indicates a great deal. That before a person, even though you can get away with it, even though you can get away with it, that before a person leaves the room of a hotel and is so concerned about living in accordance with the Torah and God's will, that nobody would ever know, or even the management wouldn't give you an argument. You shut off the air conditioner if it's not needed to stay on. You shut off the lights. It's somebody else's money you're concerned about, even if it's not a Jew. That's a very high level of perfection. If you do that, you see how you'll behave in every situation, with thought, with care, with concern, with sensitivity. See? Very, very important. Of course, if you're talking about a Jew, then you're talking about behalf of the rest of the world. That's what I think you meant, that you're concerned. Because how would you like it if somebody, if you gave your house, somebody stayed and they found out they didn't clean up, they're this, they're that, you know, that you would feel upset. That's the way. You see, just because of somebody, it's somebody else. In this year, years ago, somebody asked me a very, very good question. One of the Talmudim, this is years ago. And I gave the example of the car. And this fellow said, well, let's say that that's how you treat your car, you really don't care. And he said, you know, like, if that's the case, I'm not treating his car, he doesn't actually mind. I don't really care. I drive, I step on the brake, it's not important to me. Now, if I borrow the other person's car, do I have to treat it carefully, or do I treat it the same standard, how I treat my own car? That's a legitimate question. That will ask you this question. But there are things that you do care about. Right? And those things, whether it's your collection of records, whether it's your ties, every person, whatever it is, you see, it means that which you consider to be significant, and in those cases, you'd be offended, alright? That's the way you have to treat the other person with regard to the things that he cares about. That's the way the mitzvah works. Kamalcha doesn't mean that it's going to be in the same, every object will be the same. You have your things, he has his things. Yeah, but you're just the same accord that you want to be shown to your thing, that's the accord that you have to show to his thing. Whether you have the same attitude or not is irrelevant. The underlying, that's this. The mitzvah of Yehapra Kamacha is really behavioral. Okay? It means to say, and this is why we understand it, it means to say that a person should now treat the other person. It's a matter basically of rights. You have to accord the other individual the same rights, the same recognition, the same consideration that you would want for yourself. Okay. The question, of course, is still remains. But the Torah says more than that. That's not loving. I mean, it's behavioral. Now, you're saying that the Torah is just using that word because that normally is associated with this behavior, but that's like hard to accept. Because when the Torah uses the term, it means that at a certain level that must be true. For example, you know the Torah says, "Ayin tachas ayin, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth." Okay. And that's not literal. Okay. It means money, the monetary value. Okay. So the Rav asks the question, but if that's the case, what the Torah expressed is an eye for an eye. There must be some truth in that, so what does it mean? So the Rav gave a brilliant explanation. And he said that there's a reason why the Torah said an eye for an eye. A beautiful, beautiful explanation. Why? Because the Torah is concerned with justice. And in terms of absolute justice, if somebody else takes out another individual's eye, if he's so callous, he's so lacking consideration, that he's prepared to deprive another person of his eye, then the real punishment that he deserves in terms of justice is that he should suffer the same fate. That's the third thing. But the oral law says that very few people are on that level, that in practical terms it can't be implemented that way. So the closest we come is the monetary value. But, a person might think, I'm just paying this, that's it, it's fine. No. When he pays the money, he should look at that as an atonement that this money is really in the place of his eye. Rarely he should be giving up his eye, for the Torah allowed me to redeem my eye. It's a redemption of the eye. That's a different concept. You see, but the point is, it shows that the Rav felt obligated to explain the plain meaning. Laws of mourning. And he says it is a positive command of the rabbi, shel divrayim, meaning rabbinical, to visit the sick, bikacholim, to console the mourners, nicham aveilim, lahotzi anes, burial of the dead, achnasas kala, to, you know, bride, get, you know, established, shidduch, and so forth, beluvos arachim, to, interestingly, with guests, hospitality, the most important element is the escorting them. And to be mitzasek b'chol tzorchei akura, to be involved in all aspects of the burial, and he lists them all. Then he says the chemos ameich hakal v'achasan, to, that's a very big mitzvah, to cause the chasan kal to rejoice, ulasadam b'chol tzorcheim, and to help them with all their needs. That's a very, very big mitzvah. Then he says, Elohim Gemilos Chasadim Shebegufo. This is considered to be the Gemilos Chasadim, which a person does with his own body. She'ein lehem Shir. He says there's no limit to this. There's, you know, the more you do, the more mitzvah. There's no limit. Then he says, Afa Pishakom, this is Elohim Devrayim, even though these are all rabbinic, interestingly enough. Harehim Bechlau, V'yahaf L'Rechma. They're in the category of V'yahaf L'Rechma. So that's not only rabbinic. He means that when you do this, you get a kiyum, so to speak. You fulfill the mitzvah of the Yahavtal Rechma. So there is a positive side to the Yahavtal Rechma. There's a positive side. There's a negative side, and there's a positive side. That's why do unto others is all is true. The negative side is do not do unto others that which is distasteful to you. There's two measuring rods, interestingly enough, in the Yahavtal. One is a preventative, not to mistreat the other person, and not even to mistreat his property, and not even to mistreat his kavod, his dignity, his reputation. As I mentioned before, that's extremely important, to say a positive thing about the other person when you really don't want to, but it's true, you have to do so. I mean, certainly part of the problem over here is that, see, people can't admit their own emotions. When they deny their emotions, they act out their emotions. That's the big thing. There's also a positive thing. And that is, interestingly enough, to cheer up the other person, to visit the sick, and so on and so forth. Okay? Now there, it's not necessarily based upon the principle of harming. It's not so much that if you don't, you're going to harm the person. You see? Well, that may be true to a certain extent. No, but it's something that you owe the person. Because just like when you have certain claims, it's always the best, as I keep repeating, put yourself in the other person's situation and be honest. How would you feel? And put yourself in that, just like you have claims. If you want to know what the list is, just go over the list of all the things you're complaining about in your mind. Why did this one do this? How come they couldn't come? I made a party, this and that. They weren't thoughtful. All of those things, well, let's put them on. Those are the things that everybody else wants. If that's the Klal Gadol, and that's one Klal Gadol. Whatever it is that you want, whatever it is that bothers you, bothers everybody else. We tend to think that that person is, even if a person is a Talmud Chacham, I'm serious about this. Even if a person is a Rebbe, he's a Rebbe, he's on a different plane. Everybody's human being. No matter who the person is, you don't have the right to say that. That I didn't think he could be offended because he's on such a high plane. Not the case. Whatever it is that bothers you, bothers everybody else. There's no difference when it comes to that. Of course, a tzaddik is someone who's not going to let it affect him. You see? Or he may not be, obviously. Not everybody's on the same level. Some people are super, super sensitive, and some people have gotten beyond that. But the rule's a good rule. The question that this is the final question that I want to deal with is, it's a beautiful concept, to treat, but it should have said treat your neighbor. Treat your neighbor as yourself, in both avoidance of the negative and extending the positive. And don't go by how you feel at the moment. Don't act by the way you feel at the moment. Always forget about how you feel at the moment and act in accordance with the ideal. You'll never regret it and you'll always be happy. What is the concept though? That's great. It will make a great society. We'll all be. So why isn't the Kol Gadol b'Torah? What is the Ani Ed Hashem? I mean, what's the everything in Judaism has to do with perfection? Before is like this. So the Torah seems to be saying something which is impossible. To love your neighbor as yourself. Psychologically, it's an impossibility. Now, the reason for this is because each person has a certain feeling about himself. Let's analyze that feeling. What is the feeling that everybody has? Self-love. Self-love is a phenomenon in which everybody feels unique and different and special in some way. Now, some people have it more, some people have it, but it's part of it comes with the territory. It's something which can be observed already in childhood. I mean, it's a natural thing. And that is to say, it's not just that you love yourself, but that carries with it a certain feeling that I am really special, and I'm different, and I'm unique, and God, that's what causes a lot of certain expectations that things are going to work out. But people get let down. The letdown is not necessarily over the loss of the thing, the job, the this, the that. It's that blow to that feeling. I mean, you're living your whole life with that feeling. And other people, you know, it's an account, they have some purpose, I'm sure, but it's not the same. You know what I mean? Like, you can't accord to them, you can't look at them in the same light. That's why people always have the two categories. They're strangers. So what happens to them, of course it happened to them. And they have to live in line with the natural law. That's, you know, that's life. For them, that's life. But for you, it's different. That's self-love. Now, the question like that, is that justified? Is this feeling of self-love, is it in other words, it's there, but when you mature, when a person matures, is it appropriate to live your whole life with this feeling? Is there a legitimate kind of self? On the other hand, what's a person? People are suffering with the other thing that they don't have self-worth. They don't have self-esteem. They need self-esteem. So what is the appropriate way to resolve this? And the type of love I've just described, this type of a narcissistic thing, which people have in childhood and they never outgrow, and you see many adults with the same type of thing, I know it's kind of annoying when you see it in others, is inappropriate. It's false. An intelligent person should do it because it has no base in reality. On the other hand, however, there is a realistic kind of self-worth. Yeah. But it's not the way people look at it. It's not the way people look at it. What is true human self-worth? There is, I mean, a person should have a sense of worth and importance. That stems from the fact, what? That God, I'm the creation of God. Your self-worth is not derived. See, people don't look at it. People think their self-worth derives from something that they have, that I'm special. It's not enough. You're not even responsible for your own existence. So whatever it is, it's because there's a creator. And the creator designed you and endowed you with all of your capabilities, all of your qualities. And in the eyes of God, you have worth. Because otherwise, he wouldn't give you existence. Oh, so that's a whole different concept. And by the way, that worth, I retain that worth, not just by virtue of existence, but existing in accordance with God's will. If I fulfill his, then I'm important. Because that's what the God says. That it'll be, I will rejoice over you too, and reward you. The Lord your God loves you. I mean, of course it's not emotional. Though. But we have to translate. It means, and some, even though we can't understand it, on some metaphysical plane, our existence has importance in the eyes of the Creator. Oh, so then you have, that's important. That's your real importance. Now, that feeling, if you're feeling of, you feel good about yourself, and that's because you recognize that you have a unique nature, and you've been endowed with the unique component and a unique opportunity to serve God, then you feel good about yourself, and that is the same thing. That will, if my feeling of self-worth derives from the fact that there is a will, the divine will, that endowed me with existence and accords me worth, then I have to realize it's the exact same thing which applies to every other being that God created. There is no difference between me and between anybody else in the scheme of things. I only exist because of the framework, because there's a creator, and it's the will of the creator to create a certain type of a being. Now, if I was the only being, fine, but that very same will, which is responsible for mine, is responsible for everybody else out there, so there is absolutely no difference between me and everybody else out there. So if I have importance, that being has importance. That's what the Gemara meant. One of the, I forget the name, he said, Ani Bria, Vahain Bria, I'm a created being and that created being. And that there's no difference. Once a person realizes that this is such a fundamental, it seems simple, that you are a created being. First of all, what does it mean on a practical level to say that I exist only because of these reasons? The person has to know why he exists. How many people can stop and think about that? Why do you exist? The average individual doesn't even take it for granted. I exist because I'm me. Why does the world exist? Because the whole world and all of history was for me. The Shvili, Nivra Ha'olam. For me. That's all a person. As absurd as this sounds when you speak it out, but on the emotional level, that's how it works. For me. That's it. Me. I take care of mine. That's the attitude. That's why it's called Govatel. Because this mitzvah, in order to fulfill it, that's why he told them, this is the whole essence of Kol HaTorah. What is the essence of Kol HaTorah Kula? See, the essence of Kol HaTorah Kula is a recognition of God. That everything that exists, exists only because of God. And we, our whole existence and our whole purpose is only based upon the will of God. That God gave us a nature, he gave us existence, and we exist to fulfill that purpose. And then in that framework, every other being, you see, well, once you mistreat another person, that's why it's in the negative. When you mistreat another person, you're saying there's a difference between him. It's his property, not that important. My property is the important property. As soon as you say that, you're denying the fundamental. You're denying creation. You're saying that then you're denying creation. Because if you accept creation, then he was created too. You see? If you're going to treat this person by the way, yes, non-Jews are created as animals now. But bear in mind, by the way, tangentially, any distinctions I make when I talk about treating a Jew and a non-Jew, they're purely technical. In a philosophical sense, it means all mankind. That's what the Vi'achla Re'acha Kamocha. I just wrote a post recently on the issue. The question was raised about do we have a moral concern about the ethnic cleansing in Kosovo as Jews? And I quoted the pasuk, "You shall love," I quoted the pasuk, "Thou shalt maskin avi by the blood of your brother." And I said, technically speaking, brother means fellow Jew. But the Torah used the word in a broader philosophical sense. We're concerned about all individuals because of tzelem elokim. There's the concept of tzelem elokim, and that is the point. That when you show disrespect to somebody else, you're showing disrespect to God. Because this is the creature who was created by God and endowed with the Tzelem Elokim, for the divine image. He reflects God. So how you treat the other individual, then either you're denying the Tzelem Elokim. See, that's why bigotry is contrary to Torah. Bigotry, mistreatment of people because of accidents, black, Asian, Hispanic, whatever, or any other nonsensical thing which people... If you do that, if you engage in that, you're denying God. You're denying that, or you're denying men. You're saying you got to be denying. If you maintain that the essence of Adam is the instinctual, so then you make these distinctions. I don't like his looks. This one's better looking. This one's smart. That's because you're saying the essence of man is the instinctual. But if you're saying the essence of man is Tzelem Elokim, and you're saying that all people that exist were created by God's creation, so then how can you mistreat this person on the basis of an accident? You're saying that the color is the essence of the person. When you're doing that, you're denying God. You're denying Tzelem Elokim. So that's the foundation of the artist. So the mitzvah of Yehachareh Chamocha is based upon a recognition that everybody has a certain importance, everybody has a certain value, and everybody has rights. But where do they stem from? Where do rights stem from? If you deny God, you deny human rights. Interesting point that has to be made. Many people think that you can be an atheist. Thank you. Atheist and but moral. Moral, and that it's wrong to humanitarian. I'm telling you, it's an impossibility philosophically. If a person denies God, then what is wrong with killing another person? I'd like someone to explain that. If there's no God, we all exist because of an accident. It's like we're just a bunch of animals out there. So no one has any rights. The mighty, whoever's stronger. What? Yeah, you can make another. Say practically. This is what they'll say. They'll say, practically speaking, though, if the whole society will break down. I'll agree with you. But what if it's not? What if it's a situation where no one will ever know? Okay, I can get away with it. All right, I want the person falls in love with the other person's wife. Wants to get rid of the husband. Just nuts, can do it. Knock him off. Morally, what did he do wrong? It's just an animal that wasn't supposed to exist in the first place. What? Whose rights are being? But that's why the framers of the Constitution said we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, okay, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. That's the telling. If there's no Creator, well, that is a Creator. You have a. Where do you get your right to exist from? Because God's will that I should exist from my Creator. Oh, you see? Rights can only come. There's no concept of human rights outside of the framework of a Creator. There's a Creator. So we all exist because of His will. He determined. He gave me a right to exist. And with the right that He gave to you, He gave to everyone else. Your right is no greater than the other person. You see? And if a person realizes that the Achaver Kamocha means that it's based upon the Ani Hashem, I am the Lord, the recognition that we all, everyone's worth and value and right, all stem from the fact that you are a creature that God's will relates to, then you can have a whole different way of living. Now, why the Ahavta? Love? Because the truth of the matter is, when a person is on a high level, you see, and he bases his relationship upon the fact that when he sees another individual, what he really sees is the Tzelem Elokim, there's a positive. That's the ideal. The mitzvah itself does not demand emotional love. And at no point does it ever demand, but there's a different kind of love. It means that a person who is perfected in terms of his relationship with God, like Avraham Avinu, automatically is going to have a certain identity, solidarity with all of the creatures that God created, a certain sympathetic attitude. That's what it means by love. You're going to want to help them. Because why? Because they are creatures. You're going to recognize they are creatures who are created by God. You'll feel sympathy that they are not, and you won't be angry at a reformed Jew because he's not keeping the mitzvah. To the contrary, you'll feel a sympathy because you love mitzvah and you realize that it's not his fault. He didn't get the proper education. You want to bring him closer. I'm not talking about wicked people, Rishayim. That's different. I don't mean Hitler and Nazis. Of course, no. That's a Moloch. So I gave you that concept. That's a Moloch. There are certain people you have to hate. That too is required. That's not what we're talking about. The Afla Reyacha. Reyacha means as long as he's within the boundary line of being regarded as a friend. Who can be regarded as a friend? A human being who has not destroyed his Tzelem Elokim. So if you relate to each and every person on the basis of their essence of what they really are, a being that was created in the image of God, so then the Torah says you will have a positive, you will have a relationship of love. That's why the Torah uses that word. That's the ideal. You see? But that's why it's called gadol. Because the mitzvah really is based upon all the fundamentals, all the foundations in terms of action, not just in terms of the abstract and how you act.